Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Welcome. As if you haven't been welcoming each other for a while. So we are going to spend some time during this season of Lent. Everybody's still got your virtual smooch on your forehead, right?
Virtual.
So, it's virtual. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I sprinkled it into Bruce's hair.
So I needed
the other way to do it.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be appropriate during the season of Lent for us to talk about death and dying. And so we're going to start with, why do we need to talk about death and dying? And so we're going to talk about why we need to talk about this stuff while we are still healthy. So I'm going to go on the assumption that you all are roughly as healthy as you were last Monday when you assured me that you were all very young and vigorous.
And I missed that part.
Oh, everybody but Bev is young and vigorous.
There you go.
So we're going to have some conversation this evening about why we need to talk about death and a little bit about what are some of the things, some of the kinds of conversations that are important to have. And then we are hopefully for most of the Sundays in Lent, which are basically going to be the Sundays in March, because next Mondays, right? We have this class on Mondays. Next Monday, of course, is March 1st. And so through the month of March will be the remainder of Lent. And we will have some conversations, hopefully with some experts, so it won't all just be me. So we're gonna hopefully get some experts on, you know, what happens to you physically when you die? What are some of the things that that people wish they had either talked about or decided before they get to that point. So we'll have, those will both be hopefully some conversations with folks connected to hospice, a medical director and a chaplain who interact with both of those pieces of the dying process. Of course, that's hospice's whole reason for being, is to walk people through that process. We will also have a funeral director to talk with us about, you know, what are the pieces of planning your funeral that you haven't done yet? Some of us more than others, I'm guessing. So those are three that I know we are getting lined up here. And we will also hopefully talk a little bit about, you know, planning for, you know, some of that will and estate planning stuff that you have to, you know, what are the considerations you actually have to think about? How do you think about that with the way that families can be complicated, the ways that your own stuff can be complicated? Hopefully we'll talk a little bit about, you know, how do you think about the legacy that you want to leave behind? Outside of some of those nuts and bolts things, you know, Who do you want your grandchildren to talk about after you're gone? So we're going to talk tonight with Michelle Knox, who is not joining us live and in person. She's going to talk about why we need to talk about death while we are still healthy. So I want to ask the upside down version of that question. She's actually from Australia, so she would understand why the question is upside down. So the upside down version of the question is, why don't we talk about death? Why do we avoid those conversations? And maybe you are all very just like open and upfront about it. So you can talk, you can tell stories on other people here. Why do you think people avoid having conversations about death?
We don't want to think about it.
Yeah, why don't we want to think about it?
It's a fact of life.
We like to keep living.
Yeah.
I think we've thought more about it since the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
With 500,000 people dying.
Mm-hmm. I expect we have, yeah.
What
have
comes
we thought about ours? Have we thought about our deaths during the pandemic?
I haven't. What I was going to say a minute ago is that most of us enjoy the way we are living, and declining into death is seldom any fun. So maybe that's why we don't want to talk about it. We just want to focus on the right now and not have to think about bad stuff that might be coming.
Mm-hmm. We anticipate that it gets worse between here and being dead.
That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think being dead gets better, doesn't it?
Eventually.
Yeah. So yeah. So after theologically,
we,
of course,
after
yeah.
We are dead.
Right.
Then it's great.
Right. Well, so that's I'll tell stories on the hospice chaplain there. I don't know if this particular hospice chaplain will talk about it, but the part of the wisdom from hospice is that people are much less worried about being dead than they are about dying. If we could just get from where we are to the pearly gates, yes, without having to go through the part in between, that'd be great. But it is that, it's that what happens, not what happens after we die. We've got good church answers for that. But what happens while we die? I think that's the part that that John's saying we anticipate.
Do you mean at the moment? You mean at the moment we die, or do you have a bigger frame?
I would have a longer time frame than that. I expect that the hospice physician will have a longer time frame than that. So not the very moment of death, although that's a process all to itself, in the even just say the last few minutes, certainly the last few hours, you know, when you're talking about a death from illness. But I think we would talk about, you know, what are the weeks and months like as well.
It can be painful.
It can be painful.
Very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And sad.
Normal, I think you would think about missing the people you're saying would do. You can get to a state where you don't do that, but that would be me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have stories about how people have died. And I had a friend named Jim Brotherton. I think some of you guys might know him.
Their camera a little bit.
His dad was fishing at the pond, sitting in a chair and just fell over backwards and died. You know, that's the way to go. And we've also, I had friends that spent a long time doing it. So kind of depends how to go. There's some ways to go and some ways not to go.
But it's not always our choice.
And Jean, you were going to say something, and then
yeah,
we'll get to
I was going to say, the original question being, why don't we talk about death? I think a lot of it, because I don't think I don't think of it as so personal as in, why don't we talk about my death? It's why don't we talk about your death? Because I don't want to be thinking that you're not going to be here anymore. It's a very emotional thing. I mean, we've lost your parents or somebody and you miss them, and just going through all of that, you push it aside. You just say, well, let's talk about just what we're doing tomorrow and not worry about it.
Yeah, so it's emotionally difficult to have those conversations. Yeah, Warren.
Well, just because of the age of this group, and Bob Johnson kind of touched on it, we have had the opportunity to watch way too many relatives and close friends and members of church take different paths to their ultimate death. And I think, well, I shouldn't say we, what troubles me is I don't know which of those paths might be waiting for me. Bob was talking about this gentleman that was fishing past. My mom, same deal. Healthy, was at church on Christmas Eve and died January 10th from a heart attack. You know, just, and I had so many people say, Warren, you miss your mother, but that's a great way to go. Well, see, I wasn't thinking about that was a great way to go, but as you get knowing that we all are going to take that route eventually, it's just which one is waiting for me that probably troubles me.
I think it would does easier, trouble me. I think it would be easier for most people if they had some better idea of what was going to happen. And we can talk about living in the assurance of eternal life through Jesus all we want to. We still don't know what's going to happen. And most people can't have that assurance. I feel sorry for Catholics because they can apparently never know. And they're apparently all going to go to no matter what they do, they if they haven't had a full confession lately and if they've committed a sin that they didn't realize was a big deal, they're still going to go to
purgatory.
What do you call it? Purgatory, thank you. And the uncertainty, even not for those who have no religious faith, I think there's some comfort in their saying, you know what, when I'm dead, I'm dead. I have no expectation. That seems to be better than wondering.
So that uncertainty about what will happen or where we will end up. And I will point out that I know plenty of Presbyterians who, when push comes to shove, they are pretty sure that they're going to get into heaven on their own merits or not, rather than, you know, trusting in the free gift of eternal life, you know, through grace, by faith, all that jazz that we supposedly think. So so just before we go, you know, saying that's only a Catholic problem.
Yeah. No, that's kind of gone by the wayside now anyway, purgatory.
Yeah, turns out the Catholic Church has always believed in salvation by faith, by grace through faith as well. So, So tell me one thing. What do we lose when we are not open about death? So we've got all these great reasons we don't want to talk about it, right? Everything from it's just emotionally too hard to there's so much we don't know to, you know, we want to focus on, you know, what's happy and still breathing in front of us. And, you know, there's nobody mentioned magical thinking, but I think that that's actually a piece of it that we're somehow unconsciously afraid that if we talk about it, it'll happen.
What?
It's like saying the ghost's name three times and then they show up. I don't think we ever think that we think that, but I think that that's a piece of you know, the way that we avoid topics. So what do we lose when we are not open about death? You can even ignore that magical thinking thing and just talk about, man, you know, like, I am really glad you people are all still alive.
For
what
reasons.
What do I lose that I don't, when I don't talk about it? John?
For reasons that probably don't make much sense, I feel like if we don't get things in order, and I don't mean everything in perfect order like Sue if she's moving, but generally speaking, get things in order and settle up our debts, whether financially or morally or whatever, we lose that feeling. And I was thinking that if I think of my friends and neighbors as living on the same block with me, if I don't think about shoveling the snow, or if I do shovel the snow and push it onto their sidewalk and leave it there instead of getting rid of it, I think I've left something behind. I've not completed my course.
I like to think I'm in control, you know, that I control things. So like when my mother was 98, well, when she was about 95, we went to the funeral home and she picked out the lining for her casket. And she said, you know, this is a little weird, you know. But, you know, she had all of her affairs in order. Things were paid for. And it made it much easier on the rest of the family when everything was planned. And that's what I hope to do. And I guess I better get started on it. But, you know.
Yeah, the funeral director and the estate planner will both say the thing that your pastor's about to say, which is that getting all this stuff figured out is a huge gift to whoever is left.
How many of you remember Helen Dance?
She
was a member of the church for quite a while. In fact, she was famous for her skill at folding the the bulletins. Well, she, when she died, her son came to see John Severson a few days after, and he said, I don't know what to do. And John said, well, I do. And he went to the filing cabinet and pulled out a file. She had it all planned out. She and John had worked it all out.
Nice.
And Sonny Boy was very much relieved.
That's a huge savings. I think that's, considering our children, those we leave behind, although I'm finding my kids don't want to talk about it. I'm trying to make plans. And Mom, that's morbid. Well, yeah. But it's inevitable. And why don't we take care of it now? But they're just not ready yet. So some of them. But you know what? It's my decision and Bruce's decision. And we, you know, I think to address it, we're very open. But our kids both have wills, both have our wills, and, you know, everybody's in the estate planning and stuff like that. But
when my mom was declining, which was very slow, she died quite suddenly, but not of what anybody expected her to. She talked for years about how she ought to get her affairs in order, essentially. It would be one subject one week and another the next week. And when she suddenly did get to the point where she was not totally with it anymore, I thought to myself, well, I guess I'm going to have to do that. And then when she died in hospice, I found out that she had made all these plans. She just hadn't told me.
Oh, my gracious.
Or her pastor. The funeral home showed up because somebody in the church was connected to the funeral home. And I said, I don't know what we're supposed to do. And they said, that's all right. She has it all figured out. Oh, really? And then on top of that, she did a will, and I saw to it that she did a will. And I was even there when it was executed, although if you know anything about lawyer stuff, I couldn't be involved in it. But doggone, we never did find it. I had to go through a special court proceeding to prove up a copy of her will. Nobody was going to object. Nobody disbelieved it. But it was a whole, we looked high and low. Her old lawyer's office went through everything they'd ever had, and nobody could find it. So tell somebody, like you're saying, Bev.
Yeah, so you gotta not only make the decisions, but you have to tell somebody and make sure that they know where the stuff is and who to call. Yeah. So one of the people you can tell is your pastor. I'll say that.
So do you keep files like this for the families?
We do have files like this. They're not very extensive, assuming that I know where they are. So
are there some in the office?
I believe so. Yeah. And
I've never seen a man in my office.
Yeah, no, I believe they're in mine. Yeah.
In your closet.
The dead end file.
Dead end file.
Number one.
And anybody, you know, anybody who has made those plans and you're not sure whether I have them, you know, photocopies are cheap. I'd love to get new ones. So, and sometimes your stuff, you know, updates. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that we have to add new great grandchildren to the obituary, but it can be more complicated than that. So
my mom's pastor in her last few years was somebody who had not been her pastor when she was active in the church. She just wasn't, she didn't feel well enough to go. Although sometimes I think she was feeling like she didn't have the latest hat or something, but anyway, she didn't go to church much, but her pastor at the Presbyterian Church in Mason City did come and visit her. And I liked the lady, but I didn't have anything much to say about her one way or the other until it was time for me and my half brother to sit down in her office the day after my mom died, or maybe it was the second day. And she had some idea what my mom wanted. And I didn't know they'd ever talked about it. But more to the point, she was very good at steering us into thinking about the stuff she we should have thought of. And I was not looking forward to that session because I hadn't a clue what was going to be said or needed to be known. And she somehow in the back of her mind, she had this all thought through, even though she didn't have any details like, for example, I don't think she knew about where the cemetery plot was. And she didn't know my mom's favorite hymns or any of that stuff. So I'm glad I paid some attention to that. But she nevertheless, just by knowing what needed to be done and thought of and being very kind and deliberate about it, was a world of help to us. And I think that's what you're talking about, that as you get on in the practice of ministry, you probably get a better feel for it. But that was another thing that saved us from being totally lost.
I went through it many years ago with my wife, and she had the cancer, and I just watched her go downhill for 2 years. And we had a lot of opportunity to talk and plan what the funeral would be like. And we went to Rest Haven, where you can get a copy of something called a personal protection guide. It has everything you ever want to know and do with setting up arrangements and thinking about wills and funerals and burial plots and all that stuff. So,
and what's on the stone? And
we had a lot of conversations, and it was all set in stone here. But I recommend going to a funeral home and asking for one of these protection guides. They all have them. And it's amazing when you fill that out, what you need to have in the back of your mind and ready to go.
And there will always be some questions that just can't be answered until the time comes. But if you only have 6 questions to answer rather than having 100 questions to answer, it's a whole lot easier.
Right.
So your pastor has a checklist that he goes down as well when he sits down to talk with a family getting ready to put a service together. So if you don't have plans on file in my office, we go through that with your loved ones and talk through those pieces, but I would be happy to do that with you in advance. So.
And I had the opposite of experience from Bruce, that my husband had cancer for 2 years and he didn't want to talk about a funeral. So I did what I wanted to do.
And you know, sometimes it's more comforting to those we left behind to choose the music or, you know, something that they could relate to more. I don't care. I'm going to be dead. I don't care what they sing. But if I can give some suggestions, and then just, I always put the caveat in or what the kids want.
Louie Louai is on my playlist.
No, it's not by the Beatles. So it's not going to be. That's his favorite. He wants all the music going to be the Beatles, everybody.
It's going to be a circus. I hope you're around to see it.
Magic tricks.
I've already got the
disappearing act.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, I've already got the sermon written for Bruce's. It's just going to be, hey, Jude. Don't make it sad.
Oh.
All right. Hey, we're going to hand off here to Michelle Knox, who is going to tell us a lot of things we already know about why we want to make sure that we have these conversations while we are still healthy. But it's always helpful to have somebody else kind of frame this all out for us, and she's fun. So here is Michelle Knox as soon as I get her correctly shared here. Her investment property.
I love it.
I enjoy that. So when she asked the people at the TED Talk whether they had made their will, I saw a handful of you raise your hands. I was very proud of you all. Good work. So she gave us this sort of list of things to know and decide and have talked about and thought about prior to your own death. And so, just a few of those that she lifted up, you know, the ceremony, the religious ritual piece or the non-religious ritual piece, corpse disposal. What should happen with your physical remains? There are religious questions people often have about that. There are actually very few religious issues related to that in the Presbyterian tradition anyway. The questions of, what should the disposition be and what are your options there? Those are expanding as time goes on. That question about having a will, having put down in writing so that it's very clear what should happen and that someone knows where it should be. What you want your actual death to be like, which obviously is hard to predict, right? So you have to make plans that are sort of open in, how should the folks caring for you make those decisions? And ideally, what would you like? And what do you hope to leave behind? How do you hope to be remembered? Which is on the one hand, that ritual religious piece. And on the other hand is what's the mark that you hope to have left in the world? And Michelle Knox tells us that having those conversations gives us a chance to grieve more. Well, it doesn't give us a chance to do much of anything, but gives our descendants the chance to grieve in a healthier way. Our survivors, whether they are related to us or not. What questions are sort of at the top of your mind as we would begin a series of conversations about death? What are some pieces that you hope we will connect on?
We talked to earlier, before COVID got to be what COVID is, we talked to McLaren's early on and we kind of got to a stopping point due to the fact that church was closed. And if assuming that we would have to do, they wanted to know, well, how much do you want to bring in this person or this person? Because they would set it up so that you would have a venue for a lunch and et cetera. Well, then you ran into the COVID issues. We also discovered that we kind of got stopped in the middle because we really needed to sit down with you, Nathan, and visit about our religious portion of this. That's the only thing that we ran into that I didn't think that the gentleman, and I could be wrong on this, it's been a while, but I didn't think that the gentleman we spoke with was well aware of some of the laws because, not that I am, but we were trying to figure out, if we decided we wanted to be cremated, how long after you're cremated do you put the ashes someplace? And are we allowed to just put them in our own backyard? And his statement was he didn't think that was legal in Iowa. So that was one of the bigger things that we wanted to know on the disposition of the ashes. Where can we put them?
Great questions. And you're right, the particulars of planning a service in the midst of COVID are different just because of the, how do we think about venues and how do we think about what kind of gathering, what kind of gathering would we really like to have? What kind of gathering would we be okay with under the circumstances? How do we navigate that? And that's been hard for a lot of families and a lot of clergy. I've been really kind of fortunate as a pastor not to have to deal directly with those in a large number of cases, because as a congregation, we've been pretty darn healthy throughout COVID. But, you know, you can anticipate, boy, how do I make those decisions? And then what do I have to do with the cremains? I remember I asked a funeral director in Minnesota a cremaine disposal question, and he said, okay, well, technically what you're asking is not legal, but if you do it, here's what would happen. So that was a funeral director who did know the laws, but he doesn't practice in Iowa, so he's no more help than Michelle Knox would be on those questions.
Yeah. I'll throw in one word of caution that I'm sure you're all expecting me to do anyway, because I practiced law for so long. Don't believe a good bit of what Michelle Knox said without checking. A good deal of that is specific to New South Wales, but you're going to have the same problem in every state. Find somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, who is probably going to be a lawyer who practices in this area. And I didn't know the answers to all the questions that I thought I did, but don't, the one that struck me is, if you die with a partner, it all goes to the partner. That isn't necessarily true in Iowa. Okay, so go get that checked. I'm going to tell you what to do.
But yeah, unless you plan on dying in New South Wales, that TED Talk was not legal advice.
Right. Well put.
Even if it was, it's still not legal advice. Warren.
Claudia and I have had an interesting fall. She had a college roommate, obviously freshman. She's known her since she was a freshman in college, and a sorority sister that she probably knew for at least 35 years, if not 40. And both of them happened to know their situation was terminal. So they called Claudia on the phone. They were in sound mind. You know, they were mentally alert. They hadn't deteriorated to the point. But ironically, I think both of them lasted less than a month after they had their goodbye, farewell talk with their good friend Claudia. So thinking on that, and you know I'm a party animal, when I feel that I am probably in my last months, I won't say weeks, I'm giving a lot of thought to, well, I can still talk to my friends and relatives while having a big bash. Then I'm going to have a little coupon that I will give, that you are now excused from coming to my funeral. You can come if you want, but I'd so appreciate the fact that you came early where we've had this. There'll be music and there'll be fun, you know. only because
accordions?
No. No accordions. But I just thought how interesting that was, that in two cases, just a couple months apart, maybe 6 weeks apart, they called a good friend, Claudia Pitcher, and had a discussion on the phone. And we ended up going to the funerals. But I thought, wow, that was really insightful. While they could do it.
What a nice closure. Now,
if my health is such, then I might use phoning them as a backup. But I would rather, I'm not saying I can predict that, but knowing that, you know, I'm failing. Maybe if it's a year or a year and a half before there's a funeral, who cares? But more importantly, I got to see them and have a a fun discussion. And then I'd give him a coupon. Your excuse for my funeral. Your excuse. He came. Enough. I'll comment. Have some of the rest of you had friends who knew they were terminal call you? Have any of you, I didn't experience it. Claudia did. Any of you experienced that?
You could have it at your next birthday, Warren. We'll throw a big birthday party instead of a death day party.
Oh, I had a good friend in JC's who was too young to die, as everybody says, but he knew he was terminal. He had lung cancer and they'd run out the string on what they could do for him, but he was still ambulatory and in his right mind. So he rented out a hall and threw a party, just like you're talking about. And I think that was great for everybody involved. If nothing else, he had so many friends that if he tried to call them or they tried to call him, he would have had to postpone his death. And I think your idea is excellent, Warren. I had the thought of, if I knew I had a year, let's say, and I was going to be in good health for part of that at least, get a motorhome and drive around to here and there and see my friends who probably wouldn't come in from Washington or Oregon or Canada or Florida, but I could go see them.
Yes.
But I'd have to think about what they would do to them. That might be good in some cases, bad in others, but trying to plan my exit so it was nice for me and not too painful for my friends and relatives.
Just as a follow-up, my second job out of college, would you believe I was office manager at Calvin Manor? It was fairly new. I think it opened in 65 and I was there in 67. Dean Wacoff decided he didn't want to be executive director. So they moved up the office manager and there's an opening. So I came back. Well, long story long, everybody that passed away at Calvin Manor, which of course we had retirement apartments and a nursing home on the top floor, either Jerry Helfenstein, the executive director, or I represented Calvin Manor. So you can imagine, I went to a lot of funerals. And it always troubled me, as Nathan indicated, a lot of these pastors trying to do a service didn't know the deceased. Well, as you know, Claudia sometimes vetoes some of my wonderful ideas.
No.
I was ready. Back then, it was Super 8 movies. And then finally, videotape came. I said, I'm going to videotape part of my funeral. You know, just have it right up there. And of course, it would never happen. Claudia would get lost, or I'd have to give it to my daughter. But that was another idea that I had, that I'll say, friends, you know, I'm so glad you're here and don't be sad. And, you know, I'd have a wonderful lengthy video. But then I've gone from the video idea, because I think it'd be hard to be sure it happened, to the party while I'm still living. And I'm not saying, Nathan, that traditional funeral services aren't appreciated. You know, it would be in addition to, it would not replace. But these poor pastors.
Sure. And I will say, I'm a pastor, so that's full disclosure. But in the settings in which I'm not a pastor and I'm just a family member, you know, that for me, the traditional work of the funeral, kind of the work that worship service does, I find to be really important and meaningful. The way that service just kind of walks through this happened. Here's what we believe in the face of death. And here's how we actually say goodbye to this, you know, this physical form. But the more that can feel like the person whom we are remembering and whose death we are marking, the more it feels like them, the better. You know, we could we'd want to, you know, we'd want to kind of prep everybody for Warren's about to start talking, since everybody, you know, will assume that that's done for now. But you know, to have a something like that, to here's what Warren would want to say to us right now, that can be really powerful. When my grandfather died, he was a Presbyterian pastor, you know, died. He'd been ordained for probably 60 years when he died, and he did not plan his funeral. But what we ended up doing, this is the side of the family that we're all clergy. So what we ended up doing, he kept every piece of every service he ever did. And so we went through binders and binders and binders of funerals that he had done and pulled out, you know, prayers and readings and such from those funerals. So it was as if he had written his funeral, he just left all the work to us. So, you know, but so it was doing the work that a religious ritual can do, but it was very, very personal. Those things don't have to be at odds with each other. And Warren, if you happen to produce that video and you need a safe place to store it where your family won't find it until it's too late, call me up.
Whoa, there's an offer that I'm going to remember.
Wow, how nice.
You got to remember why you can still put sentences together, though.
Yeah. And you'd keep it generic enough that it wouldn't be dated, you know. I could do that, you know, 10 years ahead of when it's going to be. Because my personality will probably be the same to the very end.
We can only hope.
Unless I'm drugged, which could happen. I have a low threshold of pain, so I want lots of morphine or whatever. But anyway, we've
rambled. Make sure that's in your medical advance directive.
Yes, we've done that, believe it or not.
You want that in there. Drug me up.
I think what is so important, and it really registered this fall, is that we verbally shared our feelings with our all the relationships that you have. Sometimes words go unspoken. And I thought, my gosh, how wonderful that those two women called Claudia. I mean, it just happened once, and then about 6 weeks later, a second time, I'm thinking, whoa, this is powerful. Now, I don't know, I might be rude to Bruce because he's never liked me and, you know, treated me poorly. And as an old cantankerous person, I might say something that is inappropriate. So you gotta be careful. Maybe the videotape is better than live. Bruce, kidding. Just kidding, Bruce.
Warren, if you speak live at your funeral, we've got a whole different kind of event going on.
I mean,
in those calls beforehand, yeah.
And it's overtime.
He gets overtime. Yeah, time and a half for speaking at your own funeral.
My uncle did speak at his own funeral. His daughter had a recording that he made of the cremation of Sam McGee. And he read that poem at his,
oh, very nice,
at his own funeral. And it was by memory. He wasn't, because he was blind. So it was just, had to come from his memory, that poem.
But that's lovely.
It was kind of spooky to have him speaking at his own funeral.
Well, so at my funeral, I want you to play that duet that Lisa and I sang. Can you do that?
I should be able to do that. Let's make sure we write that down.
I'll write it down too, but yeah.
Yeah. And
also, I have maybe a flute thing I can send you.
Yeah.
What is the duet, Anne, that Lisa and you sang?
Well, it's from Ecclesiastes 2, everything there is a season. We sang it at church last summer, and then we also used it at a presbytery meeting.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. And one of those classic funeral texts, too.
You want us to write our own obituaries?
You know, that has, this is another thing I haven't done. I talk a great talk on this stuff. I have a to-do list a mile long. But that can be a really meaningful experience So if you want homework between now and next week, you could, yeah.
Sit down, I've done mine.
Obituary. Yeah.
I've written mine.
What was that like?
I've even, well, you know, the first time I had back surgery, I updated my will. I didn't have a will since my husband passed away. And then for my before my second surgery, I decided I needed to write my own obituary. And then I've updated a little bit when I think of other things I want in there. And it might be too long for the newspaper because it gets kind of expensive, but at least for the funeral flyer, I want all that in there.
I wrote mine. It's a doozy.
Full page. In the red.
In color.
Small print, huh?
Maybe he can just read it and record it, and then we can all listen to Bruce doing his own obit.
Oh, that'd be something.
Wouldn't that?
With an intro and exit on a kazoo. And I think it's Warren in his accordion.
I think it's kind of interesting here is a lot of what you're talking about, especially Warren, is those people were terminal. They knew that they were going to pass. So the biggest thing is, at what point are you going to call us all up or send us a coupon and have this party? Because you don't know when you're going to go. So you're going to have one every year in case you go that year. Or my big question is, I found that we went to two or three funerals virtually because of COVID. I don't think unfortunately, and I think that's what you're hearing from funeral directors and other people right now, is you don't get the closure at all with the virtual. And the ones we went to, they were wonderfully done, but it was kind of like just watching a TV show. But we felt like we really couldn't go because for the visitation or anything else, you couldn't hug anybody, you couldn't shake hands, you couldn't speak to them, you had to wear a mask, and you had to stay 6 feet apart. Now, what kind of closure is that? I mean, you just wave at your friend and say, I'm really sorry. And so we're kind of in a situation where it looks like we're gonna have another, at least 6 or 8 months of this, and the possibility of virtual funerals. So I guess my question is, you know, how do we cope with some of these other issues?
So yeah, how do we do this, particularly looking at this next 6 months or however long it'll be? What's the embodied piece of that? John and then Bob Johnson.
Sometimes I come back to cartoons I've seen, and of course cartoons about lawyers are not hard to find, and I've kept a file of them all. I think I know where it is, but two come to mind. One is just purely a joke, but they both have to do with the traditional scene you see in movies and TV shows where everybody gets together in the lawyer's office for the reading of the will. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? I think we've all seen those. The first one is the lawyer ceremoniously takes the will out of its packet and shakes it out, smooths it, and says, here's the reading of the will. I, Emperor Dwayne VI of Nebraska, being of sound mind. And that's all there is to it. But that'd be one way of getting closure. Another one that I talked to or emailed with Nathan about briefly is that if you're trying to get closure and remember that the dying process is not so much about you as about the people that are going to go on after you. One thing I always urge friends to do is to now, while times are good, go sit down with the people who are probably going to go before you and find out what they were about. And my mom's funeral, we always were close for the whole time she lived, and she didn't withhold much from me, except that she was from the old country and didn't talk about that much. But other than that, I thought I had a really good idea of what she was about and what my dad was about, although he died when I was 10. And every day I think, boy, I wish I'd asked this, and I could have. I could have, and I didn't. Go do that, whether that gives you a sense of closure or gives other people a sense of closure. It also gives you something to pass on to your posterity. My daughters are not particularly interested in genealogy, one a little more than the other, one practically not at all. But I would like to have something I can pass on to them, even if they don't care. I feel like it's kind of my job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, John. Bob.
Yeah, I was just thinking, speaking of obituaries, a lot of times going to a funeral, I learn more about the individual from the obituary and being at the service than I ever knew about the individual. And it's pretty comforting to hear a lot of things, you know, especially when the pastor knows the individual that died.
Maybe on the same topic I was on, but picking up on what Bob just said, just because from time to time I get hot on some band or other, like whoever said they had, yeah, was it Warren wanted the Beatles? Somebody wanted the Beatles. No, it was Bruce. Bruce wanted the Beatles. And I was thinking, you know, that's the kind of music I would like to have at my funeral. And then I slipped into the idea of, okay, I probably have enough money to get them up here, even though they're in Florida and there's 8 of them. I could probably get them up here for a few thousand bucks to do a concert for me. And I would like that. I'd feel better. My friends would feel better. We could have a good party afterwards, talk about things we wish we had known.
Is that the Grateful Dead?
No.
Oh, Bruce.
Right, yeah. No, I ignored that. Right now, if anybody cares, it's a band called Foxes and Fossils. Look them up on YouTube.
Okay. Gotcha.
Foxes and Fossils will be playing John's funeral.
Yeah. And
are there any rules in the Presbyterian Church about what kind of music you can play in the church?
I try to ask some questions about what music people are suggesting, because sometimes they're getting there for reasons that are going to be less helpful to the whole religious side of the grieving process. I'm pretty flexible when it comes to how we do funerals. Mm-hmm. I'm way more flexible with funerals than I am with weddings, because funerals are a whole lot easier to put together. Mm-hmm. And typically when people take their funeral more seriously than they take their wedding, because, you know, they may take their wedding very seriously, but they're not, you know, they want everything to be such and so. And funerals are, you know, people tend to really think about, man, what do I really want? What's really important to me? You know, and you know, if you can explain to me why you need, you know, this particular song and what that's doing there, I can find it a place to go in the service. You know, and I may say, you know, that really sounds like something you want to play at the lunch following, and have this be a bigger, you know, a bigger event than just, you know, this thing that happens for these 45 minutes or whatever it is in the sanctuary. So, I'm not super picky, but I want to know why you're looking at that. Yeah, Bruce.
I had a friend who died a few years ago, Dr. Jim Anderson. He was out at Heartland, and he put together all of the in-services for teachers throughout the summer and throughout the year. And one of his courses was Death and Dying. He had a couple of facilitators who were very good at pitching a two-day course on all that you need to know about death and dying. And it was an interesting how many people signed up for this course. I was part of that facilitator out there, but I was I pitched The Sense of Humor for 20 years with them. And it's just, and then there was the, everybody had to take human relations if you wanted to be a teacher. He had all kinds of practical courses that spoke to people beyond, you know, the nuts and bolts of education. So I really admired him. He was a brilliant man, and sadly he passed away of Lewy body syndrome. So brilliant mind just went down real quick. Like,
as a footnote, Jill Hoffman and I took that class with Brother Anderson as the instructor. And I think it was at least a $20 bill had to be a paperclip to the final exam to avoid a D in the class. That's the kind of friend Bruce was even back then. Yeah, no, Jim Hoffman, and I was renewing my teaching certificate.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I knew, well, that was early on, Bruce. I didn't know you real well then. But
you could get credit for these classes.
And yeah. Graduate credit. Yeah. The human relations with the black lady that's in the legislature. Anyway, he's legit. He was teaching classes.
Maybe the best funeral I've ever been to in some way was one that violated all the rules of planning and everything we've talked about. This guy, Sam, he was about 40. And he died of a drug overdose, which isn't, well, no, some people say is that, and some people say he gave himself a stroke or a heart attack because of the drugs. But anyway, he was something of a ne'er-do-well, but he was a good soul. And he just hadn't planned on dying. He was not churched, but he and his family considered themselves at least religious and Christian. So for lack of anything better to do, they hired the Salvation Army pastor in Boone, Iowa, to do the funeral. And he had a knack for it. He found out a few things about Sam, and he managed to preach a sermon that kept everybody from a couple of Southern Bible beaters to some unchurched people. Kept us just in awe. So my advice on that point is, don't be afraid to ask for advice. You might get some good advice that you'd never think of if you were trying to make all these careful plans.
Warren, Ruthann Gaines was her name.
Yeah.
Brilliant facilitator.
Yes, I had two classes from Heartland, and both were very good.
Even mine? Jeez.
The yeah, one two thing classes about from Heartland that were very good, and also Bruce's. Sorry, Warren had accidentally muted himself. I had to jump in.
I was going to say, the one thing about funerals, I always, you know, like to read the obituaries and learn more about that person, but I always wish I'd known about that before they died, because I would have liked to learn something more about them, or to give me something, you know, introduce a conversation if I didn't know them very well. Or, you know, I mean, they just had a really interesting history some way that I didn't know about. Would love to have talked to them about it, but it's too late.
So, yeah.
That gets back to asking them questions about themselves. Long after my father's mother died, I mean, we're talking 50 years after she died, when we were cleaning out my mom's stuff, actually, I found a painting. And I thought, what is this? This is obviously an original, but what is this anyway? And then I noticed that she had signed it. I never knew she was a painter.
Yeah.
It wasn't, it's not going to go in the Louvre, but it's a pleasant enough painting. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure anybody knew that.
Yeah.
And Pam, I've known you for decades, but I bet there are a couple things in my obituary that you don't know about me.
I'm sure there probably are. Yeah.
Why don't you email it to all of us, Dan?
Let's all, for a homework assignment, write our obituaries and read them.
Spoken like somebody who has his obituary written already.
Yeah, who doesn't like homework?
I like that as homework, though. If you're up to that, write your obituary.
One Sunday,
after church, there was no one else got on except Mary Faust. And we talked for 45 minutes, and it was just, she's just an old lady. I didn't know. And so talked about her college days at Iowa State and, you know, all this kind of stuff that, you know, some people that you only know of after 70 and you just don't know what they did in their lifetime, you know?
Well, I mentioned a couple of sessions ago that John Hintz was a member of not Black Lives Matter. What am I trying to say?
Black Panthers.
Black Panthers. Thank you. How many of you knew that of him? Okay. Well, I wasn't. I thought I might have been the only one who knew that. But that's something that probably didn't get mentioned much, and would have startled a lot of people in his obituary.
You didn't come to Contemporary Issues when we first joined, and John Hintz was there. And he told us about that. He's kind of like Vera. He'd say things over and over. So that was one of the things we heard several times.
I wish I'd been there. Yeah,
that's great. Bob.
That assignment for writing your obituary is a big assignment. I would suggest also maybe taking one thing about yourself that nobody may know that is really, really interesting. Like Anne may have something, Vasmasha may have something. I know I have something. Maybe I could tell you right now.
Go for it.
Okay. I was the first baby in Madison, Wisconsin, in 1938. Uh-huh. Big city, 14 minutes after 12, front page, Capital Times. Yes, I still have the article. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Wow, that's great.
Baby, look at you now.
Were your parents showered with gifts?
A little bit before all those gifts came.
So Bob's got the first sentence of his obituary done already. That's great.
That is
okay, cool. Y'all. I'm gonna honor whatever passes for our hour here, and invite us to come back next week. I don't have the schedule of speakers and other topics completely laid out yet, because we're waiting for responses to make sure that we pin the calendar down. So hopefully we will have the specific topic for next week sorted out by tomorrow when the Covenant Corner goes out. But in general, next week will be more about death and dying.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.